I don't think there's anything dishonourable. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think it'd be very honourable for the politicians within the government parties at this stage to go, well, now we have to find another solution to this. You know, we are elected to govern, we are elected to fix things, and we are elected to make sure all citizens, you know, have a fair go. And we have come to an impasse on the avenue that was the plebiscite. Now we must find another avenue, you know, if we're to live up to being a government.
Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. The issue of same-sex marriage has blown into a major crisis for Malcolm Turnbull, ahead of Parliament resuming next week. Five rebel Liberals are trying to get a parliamentary vote to settle the matter quickly. If the four House of Representatives members among them crossed the floor, the numbers would probably be there to bring on the issue. But hardline Conservatives insist the government should stick by the election promise of a plebiscite of the Australian people, a course which has been blocked by the Senate. There is now talk of a voluntary postal vote, and there's also speculation about a possible secret ballot of government members in the party room about the way forward. The issue has potential implications for Malcolm Turnbull's leadership if it can't be controlled. Tiernan Brady was the political director of the successful Yes campaign during the Irish referendum on same-sex marriage. He's been in Australia for the past year advising Yes campaigners here, and he's executive director of the Equality campaign. He joins us today. Tiernan Brady, how closely have you been working with the five rebel Liberals?
Well, we've made a very firm commitment as a campaign to work with people from every single party. And that includes the current five, the four MPs and one senator who are talking about how important it is to resolve this issue. But we've always made clear as a campaign that we can't be and should not be party political, whether it's the Greens, whether it's Nick Xenophon, whether it's One Nation, Labour or Liberal. You know, we engage with everybody because, you know, LGBTI equality shouldn't be a party political issue. I mean, we know that there are, you know, lesbian and gay people in every party who vote for every party. There are parents and brothers and sisters and teammates and work colleagues and supporters in general who vote for every party. So this shouldn't be a party political football. And we do, you know, we really commend the five MPs and senators from the government who are currently talking. And we know there are a lot more supporters in the government as well, because, you know, it does take people working across the aisle for these things to happen. The one thing we're clear about in this current parliament is that no one party is able to deliver a way through to deliver marriage equality, even though the majority of parliament wants marriage equality. So it will take brave people standing up and doing what people actually really want them to do, which is try and find solutions for something that the Australian people want to happen.
Well, at the moment in Canberra, things are very unclear, and what the way forward is, just nobody seems to know at the moment. How do you think events will evolve over the next few days between now and when Parliament resumes?
Well, I think what we've seen just over the last few months and will continue to see over the next few days is the fact that politicians are more and more aware now that marriage equality is not going away as an issue. And that's because it's more than an issue. It goes to the very dignity and status of a whole bunch of people in Australia. And they're not just going to fold their arms and go, oh, well, that's OK, we'll wait for another parliament to do this. And, you know, they've proved that over the last few months. That's why the world of politics has come to the realisation, whether they're for marriage equality or against marriage equality, that the issue has to be dealt with. Even Minister Dutton, who, you know, has always said that he's probably more traditionalist in his views about marriage, you know, has said as recently as last week that we have to resolve this issue and we can't go to an election without fixing it. So over the next few days, the question is how much wisdom comes to bear as politicians realise that if you are to fix it, you're going to have to work together, or else not alone will it not go away, people will just become more and more determined and this issue will continue to dominate and to blow a government off its agenda, because at the end of the day, people won't be prepared to sit back and go, I'm going to wait for my daughter's dignity to happen. I'm prepared to delay, you know, my work colleague, my teammate, you know, or my aunt being given the same dignity and status in law. It's not going away. So I suppose the long answer, unfortunately, because as you would know as well, this is all very unclear and all rapidly emerging, is, you know, whether the politicians reconcile themselves to that fact that the only way this issue will disappear, or that marriage equality will go away in an issue, is when you find a solution to deliver what the people of Australia want.
Do you have any estimate at the moment of the likely numbers in the government party room between those who want to keep the plebiscite policy and those who would like to ditch it and go to a free parliamentary vote ASAP?
And I think those numbers are very fluid all the time, because I think the majority of MPs, and also the majority, I think, of both government and opposition, genuinely would like to find a solution to this, because they now really understand it's not going away. So I think, you know, there are some who are very clear and have been very brave and taking a leadership position to say this needs to be a free vote now. And of course, we totally agree with that. And then there is another, you know, percentage of the party who are very much in favour of marriage equality. And they're trying to work out, how do we make this happen as well? You know, they are to a degree caught, because in their own bind, because they have said, you know, we went to the people with a plebiscite, but of course they have already prosecuted their commitment. They went to the people with a plebiscite and they put the plebiscite to Parliament, and Parliament has said no. So I don't think there's anything dishonourable. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think it'd be very honourable for the politicians within the government parties at this stage to go, well, now we have to find another solution to this. You know, we are elected to govern, we are elected to fix things, and we are elected to make sure all citizens, you know, have a fair go. And we have come to an impasse on the avenue that was the plebiscite. Now we must find another avenue, you know, if we're to live up to being a government.
You've obviously talked very extensively with the five, and you've got some assessment, presumably, of their will on this matter. They've come a long way. Four of them are in the House. If the party room sticks with the plebiscite policy, do you think that they would buck that line and make a move in the House of Representatives?
Well, I have to be always clear. I don't want to talk for them. I know they've been very brave and have shown real leadership. I know they have also shown great resolve, you know, because there's no doubt that a lot of pressure was brought to bear. And, you know, we've seen that during the week, even when Warren Entsch, you know, very correctly called out the anonymous sources that were saying, you know, you're all going to be deselected. You know, and it's really worrying, of course, when you can't win the argument on the merits of your position, then you threaten people and their positions rather than the policy that they're working towards. And, you know, I think the pressure, you know, you can see in the papers today, you don't even have to be engaging with them closely to know that they're probably under an awful lot of pressure. But, you know, to date, they've shown not just great resolve, but they've shown great leadership. And I think they're standing up for what the people want. And every single opinion poll for the last 10 years in Australia, you know, bears that out. This should be fixed quickly. And I'm pretty sure they're totally committed to finding a way to fix this quickly.
And if the four of them, the House members, did move in Parliament, then the numbers would be there to bring on a vote on the substantive issue, that your assessment of the position of crossbenchers and so on.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think that's all on the public record as well, from multiple articles that are out there where they have looked at the numbers. You know, these things are possible. Of course, you know, the ideal scenario is when the government and the opposition agree to work together, as has happened in so many other countries, to say, let's get this over the line. We know the people want it. And I think that really has to be the first goal. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be the goal of the five members of the government that are pursuing this in the first instance, to see how can we get the government to change its position and work with the entire Parliament to deliver this, you know, very straightforward reform.
There's talk about a possible postal ballot. Would that, do you think, deliver a yes vote?
Well, I suppose, I mean, I've always had confidence in every poll that's happened in the last 10 years in Australia. And, you know, the people of Australia are for this. I suppose there's a couple of challenges with the plebiscite, whether it's postal or whether it's not postal. And I think, you know, the public always need to think this one through. And the more they learn about what is in the proposal, the more they go, that's kind of crazy. So, you know, obviously it's very expensive and that's fine. A lot of processes can be very expensive, but it's not legally required, first of all, and has no legal standing. And that's a huge issue. You know, in Ireland, we had a referendum, but, you know, we had to. It was a constitutional requirement for us to do so. And of course, because it was a constitutional amendment, it outranked the politicians. So it became the law of the land because it was the will of the people. That's the opposite in both cases here. This would be a plebiscite, whether it's postal or ordinary, that is politically unnecessary, legally unnecessary and expensive, but also totally non-binding. And, you know, even this week, the newest member of Parliament, the Senator from Western Australia, and he hasn't even stepped in the door of the building yet, has made clear that if there's a plebiscite, he will not listen to the result. He will vote with his conscience. So now we're spending a huge amount of money on something that's unnecessary that will have no real effect. And I think when people suddenly get that full picture, they go, well, that just doesn't make any sense. And the other piece, and I think this is a really important bit about this, this is not how Australia does its business. Australia passes its laws through Parliament, and the laws that decide how people are protected and what their dignity and status is in society is done by Parliament. Now, if you take one group of people and you set those people aside and say, okay, Parliament protects everybody else, but you have to jump through higher hoops for the law to give you the same rights and dignity. And I think that's a terrible message that the world of politics would be sending all of Australia about the place that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex people have in society, that they have to work harder to simply get the same thing as everybody else. You know, and apart from LGBTI people, if you actually just forget the word LGBTI or gay and just say the sentence that government could now start introducing policy issues that affect minorities, and those minorities would be faced with a public vote when Parliament decides it doesn't want to take responsibility for dealing with it itself. And, you know, I don't think that's a precedent that the people of Australia will want to take. I think it's a very worrying road to go down, full stop, regardless of whether your vote gets posted to you in the mail or whether, you know, you have to go to a polling station.
Nevertheless, polling has shown that Australians would like a plebiscite, even though it also shows, of course, that they support legalisation of same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to people who feel, yes, I would like to actually register a vote on this?
So, I mean, and I think it's the really important question, because when you ask people, do you think that people should have a vote on this? There's, you know, yeah, sometimes a majority, sometimes a minority that say yes, depending on the polls. Then if you ask them, do you think we should do this if it's not binding on any politician, that number collapses. And then if you ask them after that, do you think we should do this even though it's not binding on any politician and it will cost $200 million, you know, it falls further again. You know, I think a lot of people probably out there, when they hear the question, do you think the people should do this, probably, you know, there's a lot of people out there who go yes simply because they look at the world of politics and go, you are not capable of addressing this simple matter and passing it. And I think there could be some frustration in those figures as well of going, we're just going to have to do what our politicians aren't prepared to do. So I think the people are being put in a position that they shouldn't be put into. Politicians should do their job. That's what they're in the House for.
Why do you think Australia has lagged far behind other countries, including your own home country, quite a conservative place on social issues, one would think? Is Australia more socially conservative, or are those who oppose change just very well organised in this country?
I think it's definitely not the first. I mean, the one thing I've noticed, you know, when you get here is the public have made their mind up on this issue. If you've gone for 10 years and every single poll says the people are in favour of this, then, you know, there's no margin of error there. The Australian people have made their mind up. Australia has one of the highest approval ratings in the world for marriage equality. In fact, Australia has a higher approval rating for marriage equality than most of the countries that have marriage equality. That's how much the Australian people are over this issue. So I don't think it's about being a conservative society. I think what I noticed when I moved from Ireland to here was actually that, you know, the values that are so similar. You know, there are countries that are very committed to fairness and allowing people to have, you know, the phrase here is, you know, a fair go, but in Ireland it would be very much rooted in the same principle, and that's borne out in their opinions. I think the challenge is, perhaps your second point, I mean, there's no doubt that the world of politics is dysfunctional on this issue, and it hasn't worked out how to pass a simple piece of legislation that the Australian public want. And yeah, I think there's probably a very orchestrated, organised no side. And you know what? You know, fair play to them. On every debate, you would expect people who are fully committed to their opinion to get out there and get mobilised. But you know, that no side has not been successful in winning a majority in the people, and it's not successful at winning a majority of Parliament. All it's successful in doing is just creating enough of a blockage to prevent the will of the people being enacted.
Can you tell us a bit about what's been the wash-up in your own country in the wake of the approval of same-sex marriage? In the debate about changes, for example, there's always a lot of talk about the problems with cake makers and people like that who don't want to be involved with weddings. Have there been continuing controversies, or has everything just settled down?
No, there's been nothing. And you know, I mean, look, everyone woke up the following morning and realised that for the vast majority of people in Ireland, the country was the exact same, but it was a kinder country, because for a certain group of people, now they were allowed to get married the same as everybody else, and they were allowed to have the same aspirations, whether they were lucky enough to get married or meet someone at all, you know, but they were able to have the same aspirations as everybody. You know, marriage equality in Ireland, you know, and it'll be the same here. The day this happens, nobody's going to be less married and nobody's going to be more gay. And the world rolls on. The sky doesn't fall in.
Could be a weddings boom, though.
Oh, look, this is the one great story that we see out of it is, you know, you see real moments of happiness. And of course, we don't look for marriage equality just for the big day out. But, you know, all those wonderful family events of people entering into loving, committed relationships, surrounded by their family and knowing that they are accepted by their community and by their country. And, you know, it's just been so profoundly positive in every way. And, you know, the other thing about it is the world of politics moves on instantly. You know, nobody was running in the last election in Ireland, no party anyway, was running with a policy that would suggest anything to do with engaging with this issue again. The issue's over. Nobody wants to remove it because it's been such a success. And you know, we keep trying to get that message across to the world of politics here, is that this will disappear as an issue the minute it happens, because the world will roll on and nobody will be affected. And there's been no dramas. There's been no problems. There's been no political upsurge against it. You know, this is just the people shrugging their shoulders and getting on with their lives and going, you know, actually, wasn't that a day that the country could be proud of? And one other thing on this, Michelle, it became a wonderful unifying moment. And even in Germany, and I thought Angela Merkel was so wise in the words she said, and she voted no, but it passed the parliament, you know, with a significant majority from across every single party. You know, but when it passed, she said, you know, this should be a moment of great social cohesion and peace. And that's what it has been in Ireland. It should be, you know, a community that's stronger because it's more inclusive of everybody. And that's what it will be here when it happens. And it's just so frustrating for so many people that they can't get to that point. And, you know, we know we'll look back on this, those of us who support this, we know the entire country will look back on this the day afterwards, and they won't be able to remember what the country looked like without it. And in 10 years' time, they'll shrug their shoulders and go, what was all that political drama about? You know, as they watch their family members and friends celebrate the same as everybody else.
Well, just at the moment, of course, we don't know when the day after will come, whether it'll come quickly or whether it'll be some years away. So just finally, as we look to this confused situation, from your point of view, what is the best outcome that could come from next week, and what is the worst outcome?
I think the best outcome is a free vote. I mean, there was a commitment by the government to execute a plebiscite. Parliament has said no to that. I think they've fulfilled their mandate. You know, I think we can move now to a free vote. The previous Prime Minister here, Tony Abbott, made clear that, you know, the last Parliament would be the last Parliament that would be bound on this issue. You know, and now we're in this Parliament and it's time for, you know, that to be enacted, for his words to be lived up to. So our best option is not alone the one that delivers marriage quickest. It's also the simplest. It's the one that, you know, gets this done fast and we can all wake up the following morning and get on with our lives. And, you know, I think the more troublesome ones are the ones where we go down the road of a plebiscite and we say, you know, some minorities have to work harder to get their status and dignity. And I think that, you know, those ones are really, really troublesome and really worrying, you know, not just for the terrible precedent this set, but for the pointless politics that are involved and, you know, and the social damage that is so totally unnecessary when you can just rip this bandage off and have it done by next Friday.
Tiernan Brady, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from our Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Liza Berlage, and we'll be back with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.